It's time to talk politics with Labor leader Andrew Little.
Yes, that's right. It is now time for our weekly chat with the leader of the Labor Party, Andrew Little. We are joined by Andrew now in the studio. Kia ora, Andrew. How are you?
Kia ora. Good afternoon.
It's very... You good today?
I'm very good today.
It's very good to hear. You should offer my congratulations on the passing of the second reading of your Healthy Homes Bill. For those who aren't aware, the bill's aim is for every rental home in New Zealand to meet minimum standards of heating and insulation. The bill has been mostly lauded, receiving lots of support, so Labour, New Zealand First, Greens, Māori Party and United Future have voted in favour of its passing, though ACT and National are in opposition. The Building and Construction Minister, Dr. Nick Smith, has been critical. He said the requirements outlined for homes to be heated, ventilated, properly drained and to be free of drafts are already required under existing housing regulations. How does your bill differ from these already existing regulations?
Yeah, those regulations have been around for a while, but, you know, funny enough, we still have thousands of rental homes that don't meet those requirements, and basically because there's actually no enforcement of those sorts of standards when it comes to existing rental properties. So what this does is make it a requirement in every rental agreement that those things will be met, and there are enforcement provisions that, you know, you get the relevant part of the Ministry of Business Innovation and Employment to enforce it, or you can enforce it through the Tenancy Tribunal. So it actually not just requires the standards to be set, but provides an enforcement mechanism by the tenant. So yeah, I was really pleased that it got through a second reading. That sets up well for seeing it passed into law eventually. Unfortunately, it won't be until after the election, but it was a good showing last night, and I'm very appreciative of the support from other parties.
So under these previous housing regulations, local authorities are held responsible for the enforcement of them within their districts. Where how does your bill differ from this? How are you going to be stricter on enforcement?
Well, first of all, there'll be an outfit within the Ministry of Business Innovation and Employment. This came through the submissions to the Select Committee, so they will have an audit task to perform. But in the end, tenants will be able to enforce it through the Tenancy Tribunal, because not having meeting those standards when they ought to be there will be a breach of the tenancy agreement and can be enforced through the Tenancy Tribunal.
Under the current government, insulation will be made compulsory in all rental homes from July 1st, 2019. Your bill states that all agreements regarding regulations set are going to be made in existence after 5 years after standards are promulgated.
Promulgated.
Is this not too long?
Yeah, I mean, the standard, that this is a stunning thing that the government did last year of their legislation. They introduced a standard for insulation, sure, but it's a 1978 standard. We've got a 2008 standard for insulation. Quite why the government thinks we should have one that's 30 years old, I don't know, but that's their thing. But we want the 2008 standard applied. And what it is, basically, the way this works is that as tenancies come up for renewal, then the landlords will have to comply, but there's a maximum period of 5 years for compliance. So there will be some properties that might take that long for compliance to be achieved, but it will be a compliance against the 2008 insulation standard. And then there are the other things. There's no proper ventilation, proper drainage, a source of heating.
I've seen there has been some criticism that this bill doesn't address the health issues as much as you're saying it will. How does this bill come about addressing health issues?
I'm not familiar with that criticism. I mean, I've seen that the people who have supported it, including many from the medical profession, and as recently as this week, I took a petition of 1,000 signatures from the medical students for global awareness. They were very clear, and one of those people, Josh Smith, is a 60-year student doing paediatrics at the moment. He was motivated to support it because of, you know, he's seen the impact on children. By having houses that are not only properly insulated but also well ventilated and also have a source of heating, then the preventable respiratory conditions that a lot of children are going to hospital for at the moment, 42,000 of them in fact last year alone, that brings down the health problems and therefore the cost of the health system of having to deal with those sorts of issues. I mean, those respiratory conditions apply as much to adults too. So to have a healthy home, to stop mold spores growing that are the source of infection, and, you know, make sure that there's good air circulating and that people are warm, you need these standards. That's why it will help in terms of health results.
In terms of setting these more requirements for landlords, is there not a risk that there could be a link between our landlords having to pay more to update these houses and raising rent as a result?
Yeah, I mean, that argument's been trotted out. Funny enough, the Property Investors Federation, who's not necessarily big fans of the Labor Party, they came out and said that these are pragmatic and reasonable standards to have. When you consider the value of the asset, the residential dwelling that we're talking about, this is a very small cost. And if you consider that the life of that dwelling is, what, 20, 30, 40 years, this is a small cost at a single point in time that can be recovered over a period of time. So I don't think any cost that a landlord has to go to meet these standards is a case for a massive hike in rents. I just don't see that happening.
Okay, moving on. Materia Ture's revelation she lied as a young solo mother in the early 1990s in order to get more benefit has been generating a lot of news in the past week and a half. The story has been dominating headlines. There's been criticism. There's some political spin going on here. Do you agree with this? There's been criticism that the Greens are using her story for their own benefit in terms of pushing their agenda?
Well, I think what has happened, Materia has come out and said what's happened. She's opened up and been very honest about it, and that's an admirable thing to do. And she's now in the process of dealing with wins and what she has to do to make amends or to reconcile what she's actually done. I can understand why Materia has done this. She's drawing attention to the fact that for a lot of people on the benefit, it is tough. In fact, it's pretty much tough for everybody on a benefit. No one, gets wealthy on a benefit. And a lot of people struggle, and particularly when you've got dependent children, it can be even tougher. So she's drawing attention to that. I do have to say, though, that from a politician's point of view, a lawmaker's point of view, I mean, one of the reasons we come into politics and into Parliament is because we want the opportunity to set the rules and ensure that people get treated better or more fairly. But we cannot be seen to be, and I don't support or condone law-breaking or rule-breaking. There are a lot of people on the benefit who fully comply with the rules. They do that because they don't want to be hassled, or they don't want to carry that in their conscience well into the future. So we do have to be clear that we have a system. Whether we like it or not, there are rules. Those are the rules. If we want to change those rules, there's processes we can use to do that, and we should be using those processes to do that.
In light of this, do you think that having such a spotlight on Green Party this close to the election, do you think that this is useful for Labor?
I haven't really seen it in those terms. I think it's an issue that the Greens have put up. I've had to be very clear from Labor's point of view. We don't condone rule breaking or breaking the law, whether or not we like the rules that is applied to many benefits. Those rules have to be complied with. I've certainly made that clear. The Greens have got, Materia in particular, have got this way of highlighting her concerns about the life that that many people on a benefit are leading at the moment, and it is tough. So we've talked about some particular policies we've got that will alleviate the stress and the pressure that many beneficiaries are on. So the winter energy payment, things like the working for families and the thresholds and so on around that. So, I think it is important to talk about solutions as well, rather than talk about what has happened historically, regardless of the circumstances of that and the reasons behind it. We've got to talk about the solutions, and I think that's, for the purposes of the election, that's what voters really need to hear about.
So do you think her actions could affect any possibility of appointing her as a minister in a Labor League government?
I haven't really thought about that. I do say of Parliament, though, we are a House of Representatives, not a Parliament of Angels. People come here with a variety of backgrounds, including having done things wrong. That's just life. But if people are making a contribution, got good ideas about, fixing the unfairness in the world and the things that are wrong, or good ideas about making life better, then we need those people in Parliament. And so I don't think we should be too fussed about that. But I haven't thought about it. In fact, the Green Party and Labor Party have specifically agreed that we're not thinking about, who might be eligible for a cabinet if we get the chance to put one together until after the election.
Okay, thank you very much, Andrew. You have a lovely day.
Thank you. You too.
You've been listening to Andrew Little from the Labor Party. The Wire.